Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
We are rolling. That's a broadcast term, Rusty Boy. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome and Russ Cortinel coming at you with show number 90 plus, Rusty, of The Suspendables.
90 plus.
I'm losing track, but we're well into the 90s.
Losing track, just like our website and our email. You couldn't remember.
No, I got it all. Thanks, everyone, for listening and tuning in week after week. You can email. We'd love to hear from you. We've got a website now, thesuspendables.com. Go there. All the stuff's on there. All the shows, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And, of course, our email is thesuspendables@yahoo.com. How about that, Rusty? I got it without having to ask. Huh?
Nice.
Isn't that good?
Great work.
Great show last week, Rusty. We had your buddy on MC who told a remarkable story. although long-winded, but we didn't want to miss a detail, Rusty. It was good. And the long and short of it is he got drunk and ended up in jail.
Out of a golf cart.
Yeah.
You know, the amazing thing about that trip was everybody, we took a shuttle from hotel to golf course and no one drove. We had shuttles, we had cabs, everything. We did everything correctly except MC couldn't make it from the 18th green to the first tee box without hitting a parked car in his golf cart.
and listen, you know, it's not like if you're up at my place, Rusty, if you're up in, you know, my circle of friends, you're going to hit a parked car in a Walmart or something, or even on a golf course, public course. It's going to be like a sort of $30,000 car, you know, a Camry or something like that. But you're hitting cars at Pebble Beach, you're into big dough. You're into big dough, right? Anyway, great story. Thanks for MC coming on. We had a lot of response to that.
Yeah.
Guys were laughing their head off. It was great. It reminded me, you know, I get stories every week, Russ, as you do. And one of my favorite this week was my realtor, who has my house for sale. And
you haven't fired yet.
No, I haven't. I haven't fired him yet.
Hottest, you know, market in the last 50 years.
And I know.
It might have something to do with the smoke.
No. I cleaned it all up.
Yeah. Ask all the non-smokers.
And shut up. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's the hottest market ever, and you can't sell.
I know. It's like it's blowing up around the world, okay? Yeah. And I just re-upped for another 3 months on my listing, okay?
Wow.
Anyway, I got to tell you a great story about him. So he's showing a house this week in a bit of a dicey part of town, okay?
What, next door?
No. No. Yeah, in the basement of my place. It's a really tough district, and mm-hmm. you know, in Edmonton, what is one of the cool things is almost all the houses, particularly in the well-established areas, they all have back lanes. So yeah. It's cool, you know. So yeah. There's no front garage. There's not a bunch of cars coming up, plugging up the front, and. This area it's a red light district, okay, where he has this house for sale. And it's not uncommon to see prostitutes walking up and down this avenue. And so when he pulls up early, waiting for his client. Without thinking, Russ, says, I gotta move these prostitutes. I gotta get them out of here. It's not gonna bode very well for her showing. And so he marches up, parks his car in the back, marches out to the front, where there's a couple of girls, and without knowing what he's doing, he whips out $50 and says, "Do you mind just, you know, moving down a couple of blocks?"
Oh, okay. Mistake.
Sure enough. Woot, woot. Okay. Okay. I'm not lying. Because there's cops everywhere in this area. There got to be. And a cop pulls up. Okay. It goes, freeze. Okay.
Oh, no.
Solicitation of prostitution. Okay.
Oh,
and he's
no.
Like, no. I'm just trying to help them.
Paying
them
to move.
I'm just trying to get them to move. Well, what do you think that excuse is?
Oh, like, yeah. Right?
Anyway, yeah. He got out of it.
As the clients pull up.
Yeah, as the clients pull up, and this guy's forking out half a C-note, and they're going, wow, what kind of realtor did we get here?
So you know what all the prostitutes are going to do now is find places that are for sale and stand out in front.
Yeah, he's given them a great idea. You know, could you? He says his heart just dropped. You know, could you imagine?
Imagine if they pulled up at the same time.
Anyway, speaking of, it reminded me of, I used to be a realtor. This is a fairly embarrassing thing. And I was showing a house. I'm a kidney stone sufferer, Russ. I've had kidney stones my whole life.
Jim, if you solicit a prostitute, doesn't make you a realtor.
It should be part of the exam. Anyway, I'm showing this house.
Okay. Back on track here.
Okay. Back on track. Just try and pay attention, Russ.
So, okay.
I'm showing this house years ago, and I feel it move, okay? So if you don't know anything about kidney stones, they're fine if they don't move, but as soon as they start to move, they're crippling, okay? It's just crippling pain. Down you go. You got to go to the hospital, okay? mine was so small that they couldn't operate. They couldn't crush it. It was too small. They found it on an x-ray, but unfortunately, Russ, all they say is, good luck with that, and you're going to pass it, okay? Okay, you got to wait till you pass it. I'm going, oh, God, okay. So I'm showing this house. I excuse myself. I'm fine at that point. Mm-hmm. I said, I just got to use the facilities. And these people are in the kitchen right beside where the bathroom is, and I go in there to have a leak, and the kidney stone comes flying out.
Jesus.
Now,
is that guy playing marbles in there?
Yeah, well, Russ, when it comes through your perjong, okay, it is – you are down. You are down.
I've heard.
So God, I've I don't know these clients. And I go, just excuse me one sec. I just try to use the bathroom. I go in there, shut the door. And all they hear is this from me. Okay. Oh, God. Oh, baby. Is that any good? Oh, I come out and they're edging their way to the front door going, we're good. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Jeez. You creep. Anyway, my poor buddy Daryl didn't get in too much trouble.
Remax Salesman of the Year, something you have never heard.
There's an extra bonus he's going to provide for you. On the show today, vaccines are rolling out here, Rusty. I don't know what's happening there. I want to ask you about that. There was an awful injury last night. Aaron Eggblad, am I pronounced that right? Eggblad, Stevie, is that right? Aaron Eggblad. There we go. I thought so. Okay. Aaron Eggblad with Florida goes into the boards trying to gather the puck. And, you know, there's a guy in there kind of checking him. The puck gets whipped out. He falls down. And you can see it in the video. I don't know if you saw it, Russ, but down he goes. Okay.
I turned it off after he was down and they said, you sent it to me today, and I just don't like watching that stuff. I didn't know, but I turned it off once he was down and they started bringing the stretcher out, so I didn't see the replay or anything, thank God.
Right.
I don't know what did he tear or break?
I don't know the follow-up of it.
They rushed him to the hospital, right?
They rushed him to the hospital, and one of the stories out of it, of course, is, you know, this is terrible. He's going to be out for an extended period. If you see it, his knee got caught underneath him and down the knee went, but the foot stayed.
Okay, got it.
Just awful.
That's why I don't watch it, Jimmy. I don't want to hear the description of it.
Please. Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, he broke his leg.
Yeah.
So
awful.
Yeah, he's out for the year. And it made me think, Rusty, that I said, I got to ask Russ because the one thing that is that people saw that you almost never see, that this is how tough hockey players are, is you don't see them rolling around when they get hit. You know, they're super tough, as you know. You played the game, Russ.
Yeah.
And this was excruciating for the guy. He was slamming his palm on the ice.
Yeah. When you see a hockey player rolling around like a soccer player, you know the hockey player is injured.
Yep, totally, totally. And
that's male soccer players. The female soccer players bounce up. They're tough.
They're tougher. Yeah. Tough. Also, this past week, and then looking back, Milan Lucic, dirty hit on a Jets player a couple nights ago, Mason Appleton. They're going to review that. And then when we back up, I had asked you about this. We never talked about it. Tom Wilson missed 7 games because of suspension for a hit he put on the Bruins. Brandon Carlo. I want to talk to you about that. A referee got fired this week.
Yeah. Hot mic.
We get your opinion on that. And what players, I wondered, Russ, whether players have a say at the end of the year, if they have a say in good refereeing or bad refereeing. We want to talk about that and other stuff. The first one, Russ, with the injury to Ekblad, we know how tough hockey players are. Did you ever get badly hurt, Russ?
I broke my wrist, my ankle, tore both rotator cuffs, and I had concussion issues early on my first year. Lost a couple teeth. Some stitches. Overall, 16 years, not too bad. I'd say I was one of the fortunate ones. Talking about that leg injury, I was playing with Mark Tenorti. We're in LA, and they've gotten rid of this now. Remember when players would race on an icing to the puck,
right
to the boards, and I think it was Drews hit Tenorti racing for the puck and snapped his leg, and it was just disgusting. It snapped. Yeah, snapped in half. And so, you know, that was back in the mid-90s, and then they finally, after years and years, they got rid of that. So now they race to the face-off hash marks, and whoever gets there first with their stick or something, and that's it. That, and then the race is over for the puck,
blow
right?
It dead, yeah.
So, yeah, blow it dead. So it's a good rule. I remember texting with Eddie Olchuk while he was doing a game. Some of my, you know, ex-teammates, Ray Ferraro, Ed Olchuk, Kelly Rudy. I'll text them during games when I see something. And I remember going over this with Eddie about the race for the puck for the icing. And I was giving him my ideas, and it was pretty funny. And my idea was this race. And I'm sure it was lots of other people's too, but that was what I was trying to get across was there should be a race, but it should end well before the boards for that reason.
Right.
But I didn't have, broken leg or anything. I broke my ankle, broke my wrist, but no broken legs. Thank God.
You'd be naive if you don't think that injuries are part of hockey.
Yeah.
Anybody they're
play long they're, enough, you're good.
Yeah. Can they do anything, Russ, to prevent them equipment-wise? Would you? I know at one time everyone had huge shoulder pads. Grapes was really outspoken about that. You know.
Those were bad. Those were that coincided with all the concussions because guys were hitting guys in the head. And they've gotten rid of a lot of that. I just think injuries are going to be part of the game. I mean, you're going to get hit with a stick. You're going to get hit with a puck. You're going to get hit by a body. If you fight, you're going to get a punch in the face. So injuries are always going to happen. And I think they've done a really good job. But the game is so fast now. The equipment is so good. Everybody from the top forward on the team to number 12, number one D-man to the 6th D-man, they can all fly. In fact, the goalies look pretty good out there too. They can motor. Right. I mean, everybody's a great athlete out on the ice, and the equipment helps some or I should say it helps them all, and they can fly, and they're just better condition, stronger, faster, and you can see it on the ice, and that's just going to, you know, injuries are going to happen.
Let's clear up, Russ, the question. And a lot of fans of hockey think this is true, and I just don't believe it. But I said, let's ask Russ. During your career, Russ, was there ever a time when a coach told a player to go out and hurt a guy?
I don't think a coach has ever said go hurt the person, but they've definitely said go out and hammer the guy, like go send a message, not to purposely injure somebody. And when a coach says, and it would never have been said to me, but if a coach said, get that guy, that would mean like go out and physically hit him within the rules. You don't want to get a penalty. You don't want a suspension. So mm-hmm. when a coach is directing a player, I think most of the time when a player does something illegal, you know, it breaks the rules. It's just the adrenaline, they're frustrated and they can't control themselves and they do something. And then there's other times when it's just a pure accident. They didn't mean to do what they did and they still get suspended. So, but no coach is going to go, you know, go take that guy out of the game or, you know, it's just not going to happen. When a coach would say, let's take a player out of the game, it meant take him away from what he does well. Like, don't make it hard on him. Take away his time and space. Be physical. Anything you can do to take that person off their game, you're going to do within the rules. And mm-hmm. and no coaches I've ever heard of, you know, somebody, you know, take him out of the game, meaning out, injure him. That's just not going to happen.
What does that mean, Russ? Take away their time and space.
So the faster you can get on somebody, you take away their time. And then if you're on them, that you take away the space. The more space and time you give a player, the longer he has to make a decision, to make a good play. And the, you know, time and space, we're always like, as coaches, when I was coaching, take away their time and space. And that just meant get on your horse and get in their face as fast as you can so that they make a bad decision with the puck and hopefully they turn it over. And for any coaches out there listening, without a player without the puck, the best thing they can teach these kids is just to fly and be on in pursuit to take away that time and space of the player who has the puck. And then if he passes it off to a teammate and that player doesn't have the time or space, eventually you're going to get that puck back.
So fast forecheck and back check.
Yeah, exactly. Hot pursuit, both on offense, you know, offensively, defensively, you want to do things as fast as possible. And, you know, and when you play at a high pace, like you look at some of the players and the defense back off because they're just, you know, they don't want to make a mistake.
Petrified of Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great example, but the D-men are flying backwards because they don't want to get beat one-on-one, and that just gives him more time, and rightfully so, because he can do everything at a pace that nobody else in the league, I don't think, can do it at that pace. There's a couple guys close, but man, that guy, he just, when he gets it, he's just in a whole different gear.
Right. Did you, we brought up Mario Lemieux last week about great comebacks. We had a little topic there about guys who came back before we brought on your buddy. You know, Mario came back from cancer. And when we finished the show, I said, God damn it. I got to ask Russ, when you talk about Connor McDavid and how he can turn guys inside out. And that's my phone.
Is that the police officer, the cop?
No, I don't know who that is.
Has she totally punted you forever?
You know, Russ, I've been in therapy for this. I was doing very well. Okay, I was doing so well.
The ex-girlfriend.
Why did you have to know?
I just thought maybe she might have, you know, dialed you once in a while. Just for old time's sake.
Why did you bring it up? Oh, man.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
Anyway, you talk about Connor McDavid, who has embarrassed guys, turned them inside out, an ankle breaker, as they call it. You know, when you break a guy's ankles, you deke the shit out of him. I said, I got to ask Rusty, did you ever get embarrassed by like a guy? You played against Mario at one time. He would have been around when you were there.
Yeah.
Did he ever turn the inside out or any other story you have about a player who...
I played against Mario a lot when I played in Montreal, because I played on the checking line and played with Guy Carbonneau. So Guy had to play against him head up, you know, head to head. And I was on the ice, obviously. But I don't remember ever getting like inside out, but I watched him turn a few guys. And I'm not bragging that he didn't. It's just, I don't remember him, you know, doing, and maybe he did, I don't know, but I can't tell you like, oh my God, this one time, but chasing him back, you know, from when he was on the offense and heading towards our net, I saw a couple times like he would put the puck out to one side, the D-man would go, and then all the way to the other side. And it was like, you know, the wingspan, the guy was so huge for a hockey player. He's 6'6" or 6'5" or whatever he is. And when he was so good, he'd move that puck out and to the other side, and that D-man was like, they were done if they missed it.
Right.
I mean, you see the highlights of him burning some of the best defensemen in the league. And I remember Guy always said to us, Guy Carbonneau, he's like, you can't fall asleep against Murray. You can't fall asleep, because there's so many times, you know, he'd just be hovering, and then boom, 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 he'd score, you know, 2 goals and 2 assists in the last 10 minutes of the third period. I mean, you really could not let him, you couldn't let off the gas pedal on him for one shift. He was that good. And just like Gretz, you know, you just had to be so aware when those guys were on the ice. And I think Ray Bourque schooled me in Boston. No, I don't think he did. He gave me the outside inside and went up and scored, went end to end, actually. He burned me and then a couple other guys after that. But I'm sure he went casually at him, and this is that time and space thing. And he went and just burned the hell out of me. And they end up scoring. It was a big goal too. I think we were tied and they won in the last few minutes. I got burned by, I fell asleep on,
I love this,
on Leach, Brian Leach on the blue line. I was daydreaming and he gave me the howdy do. I was just standing beside him thinking, you know, okay, I'm just standing beside the D-man. Most D didn't go to the net. Well, he went flying by me into the net and scored. So that wasn't good. I think Pat Burns wanted to sit me after that mistake. Those two D-men both schooled me, and I'm sure there's others, but those are the two that I can say that stand out today that I, off the top of my head, I know I got burned.
Right. I love telling the story about Mario Lemieux and Chris Chelios. Chris tells the story that he'd been, as you say, given the howdy do a few times and it's leading up to another game against Mario. And he swore to God, he said, he will not beat me tonight. I am not going to let this guy beat me. And apparently this is true. So Mario's breaking down the boards, you know, coming down the right side. And Chelios says, I got him lined. I got him perfect.
Yeah.
He can't, I got him. I'm off the boards enough that he can't go wide on me and he can't get inside because I can make the move. And apparently he hears Mario saying when he's, you know, getting up close to him going, here I come, Chelly. He goes, watch out, Chelly, watch out.
Oh,
and
no.
He moves, you know, that massive wingspan. So he goes to go wide on him.
Yeah.
Right. He breaks wide and yet keeps the puck up against the boards and flips it with his stick up off the glass and skates around him. And Chelly says, all I could hear was, wee, isn't this fun?
Yeah. He was, you know, people don't realize how fast Mario was because he was such a big man that he didn't look like he was going fast, but whew, could he skate?
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. He could fly and he didn't. I mean, if you're really into it, maybe go back and look at some of his, you know, Google Mario and highlights and just watch the other players, how fast their legs are going. And Mario's are like, and he's, you know, flying by them. But if you don't look at Mario, look at the other players, you'll see how hard everybody was skating, and he was just smooth, you know, smooth
And humble, eh? Russ, God, he was a cool guy, right?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I wish I knew him better. I hung out with him a couple times and in a big group. He was listening to all the stories told maybe one, but he's more of a listener, sits back he'd be a guy I'd love to hang out with and golf for a few days just to hear some of his stories. Cause I haven't heard him tell a lot of stories, but I'd love to spend some time and we're the same age, or I might be a year older than him, but anyways, he's had an amazing career. He's had an amazing life, mm-hmm. and he's been an amazing businessman. I mean, the guy is, he's one of the most successful athletes ever.
Yeah.
I mean, off the ice, what he did, he deferred a lot of his money in Pittsburgh, and they owed him $33 million. He was the largest creditor, and he ended up getting the team because they owed him them when they went bankrupt. And then he turned that thing around and built a new arena. And he's just a fantastic person. He's been through health issues. He's got a big family. You know, he's taken in hockey players to live with them while he's the GM and player. I mean, just it's a storybook.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great golfer, too.
Fantastic golfer. Yeah. I know him. And I got to spend literally a week straight with him during the World Championships. I mean, maybe it was called back then. Gretz was managing the team. They came to Ottawa for a training camp.
And, you told the story.
Yeah. And I just couldn't believe how you're totally right. Like sitting around, he's the guy.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's the man.
And we played at the Hunt Club every day. He's a fantastic golfer. And you know, he's cool. He looks like he just walked off the cover of GQ.
Good looking guy.
Yeah. Just a really suave, cool guy.
Right? Like when he walks in when he walks in a room, he's good looking, tall and handsome. He's Mario Lemieux, and then he backs it up, you know, when he talks. Like he's got the full package.
Yeah, and by the way, shot 2 under, you know?
Oh, shit.
like nothing. And super, super humble guy, so nice. You're right, he's a listener, not a talker. And, you know, he pat me on the shoulder after about the fourth hole. Right? And says, you know, let's see this hole if you can keep it to under 1,000 words. You know, he was so funny. And anyway, we were hanging out, you know, Gretz, you guys hang out, Jungle will look after you. And he's like, cool. And I said, well, let's go for something to eat. And my parents lived on the golf course we were playing at the Hunt Club. And I said, I got to go change. And I pull up in the driveway.
Everybody knows, you are a silver spooner.
Totally a silver spooner. And I said, listen, Mary, I'll be right back. He goes, no, I got to come in, man. And so I said, okay, yeah, come on in. And my mother was there, knitting away in the living room. And of course, this big giant man walks in there. And I said, Mom, this is Mario Lemieux. And she goes, oh, hello, Mario. Nice to meet you. She had no idea who he was. Okay.
Right.
She didn't watch hockey.
Right.
And I said, I'll just be back in a sec. And he poured my mother a drink. He said, let me pour you a drink, Mrs. Jerome. And we, you know, we were there for about 10 minutes before it was time to go. And off we went downtown to have dinner. And the next day I got this voicemail from my mother going, Jungle, I don't know who that man was, but he is absolutely, in all my time, the best, most handsome-looking gentleman I've seen in my life. You know?
Oh, God. That's great.
Anyway, great, great guy. So let's talk about a couple of dirty hits here this week. And I'll back up because it was a few weeks ago that Tom Wilson with the Capitals lays in my mind, and you told me to shut up when I'd phoned you about this, looked like one of the dirtiest hit I've ever seen in my life. One of them, guys up against the boards, and Wilson comes in and absolutely leaves the ice with the shoulder into the guy's head.
Jim, do you have cable?
Yeah, I got cable, pal.
Okay. Well, okay. Dirtiest ever. I mean, really, come on.
Okay, well, it was super dirty and looked, you know, premeditated about 10 yards out, 20 feet out, coming in 30 feet out, that he lined the guy up and flattened him. And you're like, I totally disagree with the suspension. Let's talk about that, Scooter.
When did you turn down the Hockey Night in Canada gig?
I just stopped answering the phone, Russ. They used to call all the time. I couldn't, okay?
No, seriously, come on, tell us when. Tell us when. Tell the listeners when.
I never turned it down.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I never got asked, Russ. Is that
exactly.
I never got asked.
I don't think it was that. I'm trying to remember. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought that the guy.
So you think the seven games was too much for that?
Yeah, I think the seven games is too much.
Why?
Well, because he's hitting him in the shoulder and the chest and then going up and then the head hits the glass. I don't think that was seven games. I think he's a repeat offender and they're trying to take that out of the game, those hits, especially against the boards.
Right.
But I think it's just because if that was his first suspension, it would have been one or two games.
Yeah, which is not, of course. He's kind of
right.
Renowned.
So they just get, you know, when you get a repeat offender like him, they just keep tacking him on. They're not going to go down,
right?
Especially, and I agree. Like I've applauded the NHL for getting rid of all these head hunting guys that you know, go around. They don't back it up. I mean, he's a tough character, but I think they've done a good job. And it's unfortunate that, you know, there's still the odd. Hit to the head.
But you believe it's improving, Russ, over all the years?
I think it is. I think from, you know, 2000 to 2010, it was brutal, and it's just gotten better and better.
Right.
You know, I think that I really do think the league has done a really good job getting rid of it. And the players had to be re-educated too, because I coached down in California, and my son played in Victoria in BC. That's where he started to play hockey when he was seven. Mm-hmm. And the hits to the head were accidental. And when I moved to California, the kids who hit in the head was on purpose. Like because they just didn't know. We had poor reffing. The refs down here hadn't played hockey. They were doing it to make 25 or 50 bucks. Mm-hmm. And the kids who referee up in Canada played hockey. And different parts of the U.S., that's the same. You know, Minnesota, back east, different hockey states. But down here in California, it was freaking brutal. I lost my mind on the bench a couple times because it was bad. You know, the kids are starting to hit puberty and the size difference of kids and hitting kids from behind. Like, it was bad.
Right.
And so fast forward, you've got these players coming up who, when they were pissed off, they would hit kids where, you know, where they wanted to hurt them, which was in the head or spear them or cross check them. Yeah. And so it's taken us, or the league, I should say, and all of hockey to get rid of that. And it just doesn't, you don't say tomorrow, okay, we're not going to allow you to do this and everybody's going to stop.
Right.
It's taken a long time. And I think now the players get it because they've grown up with these new rules that aren't new anymore, but when they made them new a long time ago, it took a long time. And you know, kid referees too don't want to kick a kid out of the game, a young
right.
kid. The first thing they do is they start crying. Right. Could be the toughest kid on the play. If he's 10 years old, he's 10 years and 11 years old, he starts crying because he's, oh my God.
Yeah. Like, you look at basketball, you know, you foul a guy, right? It results in a scoring chance. Okay. You're going to go to the foul line. You're going to get two shots. And of course, it almost always results in a point or two, you know, on the foul. And I always wondered, Russ, you know, when you get a really dirty hit, Lucic was the other guy, looked pretty dirty, cross-checked the guy into the boards, smacked his head. Whether to stop it from happening at all is if they said, okay, here's what's going to happen going forward. Because suspensions don't seem to always work because guys mm-hmm. keep doing it. Fourth liners come out. They don't give a shit if they get suspended.
Yeah, they do, but.
Well, do they or not?
100% because they lose money. And they don't get that money back.
No, the team, though, I mean, it's like, if we're going to get a guy suspended, let's get a fourth liner, a grinder, you know, not one of our star forwards or something.
Yeah.
I always wondered, Russ, whether a real blatant dirty hit should result in maybe you go two men short, maybe it's a penalty shot. Maybe it's something more severe, Russ? Or am I out to lunch?
You're out to lunch. Hockey Night in Canada is not going to call. NBC down in the U.S.
But shouldn't there be something, you know, more serious happen? Like, as opposed to just always suspending a guy and fining him?
Well, there's a penalty. There's you know, there's a power play that rewarded to the team that it happened to. So I think they've got it. I just, you know, it's too bad. Like with Lucic, I watched that a couple times. You sent it to me today and he's coming hard at that kid. Mm-hmm. And for me, Appleton, player? He turned his back to him, right? So he was sideways, turned his back, and Lucic didn't let up. And if that was me and that big human being was coming at me as fast as he was, I would have been prepared for a hit. And he thought that, you know, I'm going to turn and I'm not going to get hit. I just don't know how he did not think he was going to get hit. And when you turn, you know, Lucci's coming a million miles an hour. He's coming in for a big hit. What at the time would have been legal. And then he turned, he's got his back to him. And then it's illegal. Mm-hmm. But as the player receiving the hit, I wouldn't have taken that chance. I would have like spun totally sideways so I could hit shoulder. He would have hit my shoulder and my shoulder would have hit the boards. I think it's got to a point too where some players just never think that, okay, it's illegal. I'm not going to get hit from behind. I just wouldn't, as a player, act like I'm not never going to get hit from behind.
Right.
And I think if he had saw him, maybe he didn't see him. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. And it just, to me, it was too casual when you have that person, that player coming at you that hard and fast. You know, you turn your back, you think he's going to stop. I mean, in the last second, it's pretty tough to stop. But anyway, a little casual. I think the receiver was too casual.
I understand that, yeah. Because when kids are being taught to play hockey, Russ, you know, at a young age, you know, after 10 or 11 years old, or even before that, I don't know, you can answer this. There's a lot of time spent coaching them how to go into the boards, isn't there? And to
there's no hitting, and then you start teaching them, you know, how to hit and how to hit properly, and
or how to take a hit, right?
Yeah, both. So you line the kids up along the boards and they skate through, and you just teach them just one step into the, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And so the kid skating is going to receive. Mm-hmm. So he gets used to it, and you try it's, but man, you get kids, they're human beings with tempers and they get pissed off and then they just lose it for a second and they want to, you know, hit back. And,
right.
And, I know when, you know, I'm not sticking up for Lucic, and I'm not being hard on Appleton. I just felt like one guy was going in to take the body and the other guy was too casual. And when he saw his numbers, when his back was turned, it was probably too hard to stop. And he didn't have enough time to stop. And the other guy who was going to receive the hit, if he saw him, he should have been more prepared, in my opinion of it. What I saw over, I only watched it a couple times, but
all right. God, this is awfully serious. This show,
let's get back to the cop.
As soon as you say it, I go, Tim Peel, an on ice referee since 1990.
Met him last year at Gosser.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Okay. Hung out with him. Nice
53
guy.
Years old. This guy was a ref. He got, he's been suspended forever.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound so serious because he was going to retire this year.
As long as they pay him and he, you know, doesn't lose his pension. I mean,
Well, the story is, just to back up, is, you know, they mic up the refs.
Yeah.
They're on commercial break or something. His mic is hot, which is the expression for it's still live. And he's heard saying, I want to give Nashville a penalty. And Coley Campbell said, mm-hmm. You're done. You're done. Yeah. There was no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, it was really quick.
Yeah, really quick. And they just said there's no leeway with this sort of stuff. The integrity of the game has got to be held to the utmost degree. And they said he's done. So
we've all seen the refs make an ignorant call. And I was part of one, probably part of many. And they did it, but nobody – they did what they did with their, and we saw with their actions, but we didn't hear with their words. So this was a hot mic, but man, I got traded from Montreal, asked to be traded, was in a big deal in the media, went to Minnesota, first game back. I think it was Denny Morrell, French Canadian referee. And I did something and he gave me a penalty. And on the way to the penalty box, all I said was, I wish you were a homer when I played here. And he gave me a 10-minute misconduct.
Oh, no.
And it was this whole thing of, you know, it wasn't good. And you could just tell, like, it was, he didn't like me. And I didn't swear. I didn't say F. I didn't say you. Right. I just said, like, skating beside him to the box, I wish you were a homer when I was here. And maybe that's worth 10 minutes, but I didn't think it was.
Right.
And it just, others, you know, referees get, Paul Stewart was a very, you know, he was an interesting referee and let guys fight and said some pretty funny things on the ice, you know, like challenging guys and, you know, you're lucky I wasn't still playing or something, you know, just verbal stuff, but not mic'd up. It's unfortunate because I met him last year, Peel at Gosser, and he came in with Kelly Chase, and just a wonderful, wonderful guy, just loves the game. And, you know, he got caught doing something that most refs have probably done, you know, whether they like to admit it or not, they've probably made a call when they were upset about something.
Right.
They're just human. They're human, just like anybody else.
So what's the reality, Russ, with refereeing? Is it, you know, in a perfect world, you're going to get the old, I calls them as I sees them, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not reality, Russ, when it comes to refereeing. Do they try and balance up penalties, Russ?
How does – like, it's for sure. I mean, how is the – you go into the third period and, like, you know, Edmonton gets two penalties and Calgary gets two penalties. I mean, come on.
Right.
What, the game is played 50-50? Like, it's just it doesn't work that way.
But it's no one complains, Russ, because you're shooting yourself in the foot, right? You're going
to
get
They know how to balance. If they make a mistake, they make up for their mistake. You know, if they made a bad call, then they make another bad call to make up for it. They have to, because you know what? They have to make, just as a player, they got to make up for their mistakes.
All right.
And they're held accountable and they got to ref a good game and make it fair. They're supposed to be out there to make it fair. And sometimes it's not. And some in human nature too, they miss calls like the, you know, now they've got freaking video replay. So they got a lot of help.
Right.
But, you know, before video replay, it was.
Right.
That was offside. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was. No, it wasn't.
Well, we can't play it over.
Yeah.
The players at the end of a year, Russ, you're going to weed out the bad refs from the good ones. Players don't have a say.
No, they don't.
Like, do they go to the players and go, what'd you think of this guy? And pull all the teams.
In my era. No, okay. I never asked
it. Would they go to the coaches, Russ, or the GMs?
I don't know how it works. I think that's just the league, unless the league may have a committee, a rules committee. And maybe those guys make a decision. Right. But I have no idea, but I think that's just comes from the league. They must have somebody there who monitors them. And I think they're ex ref or like retired referees.
I personally think the refereeing, it's the worst freaking job in sports to be a ref. And I think they do a remarkable job. Is that fair?
Well, it's the worst and the best, because I've hung out with a few refs and they, you know, they're part of the game. They travel. They're mostly always in the lineup and it's a job, but they're in great shape. They get their summers off. They get paid well, and you know, they're traveling around like a professional hockey player, and they have as much fun as the players. It's just they don't have as big a team. You know, it's if four of them travel together. And so
what do they make, Russ, referees?
I don't know what I don't know.
Are they making a couple hundred grand a year?
I think, yeah, they're well paid.
Okay.
I think it's seniority too. Like, I think it keeps going up as they stay in the league. But maybe we'll get Beal on. And
Carey Fraser is never shy with a microphone.
Yeah. Carey, yeah.
You get along with him? Is it okay? What if I line him up?
I do now. I didn't when he was a ref. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but now I had this great conversation with him last year. He's got some business going with his son-in-law, and he's really fired up about it, and just great conversation. Cool. Wonderful. You know, and he's one of those guys who remembers all the good stuff. So I like that. Like, he doesn't walk around going, you remember when I screwed you on that goal in Detroit when it was in and I called it out?
Thanks for that, Carey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good show, Rusty. Listen, before we go, a little email. Peter Harrison. This is a pretty good question. If you can be biased, he says, Russ, is the Stanley Cup the toughest trophy to win in all of sports?
Well, that's what everyone says, that it's the hardest trophy to win in professional sports. And so I'm going to go with it because I never freaking won it.
Right.
And was two games away from winning it. And that was as close as I ever got in 16 years. And all sports to win at any level is tough. I just know that the NHL is extremely tough. You got to play a lot of games, a lot of series. And, I'm going to go with the Stanley Cup as the hardest cup to win.
Right. I always thought the World Series, but you know, when you look at baseball compared to hockey, the injury level is like so low in baseball compared to hockey, you know,
horse racing, the,
Triple Crown.
'Cause it's only been done twice.
I don't know when you bring it up, it's like Citation, Northern Dancer, Secretariat.
Yeah.
The 5 years ago was the last time, and it was American Pharoah. Look at me go.
Wow.
Look at me go.
Got a gambling problem, do you?
Unbelievable. I'm going to go. Come on, Papa needs new shoes. Come on, seventh, baby. Anyway, I always thought the World Series was tough. Bull riding, I think, is the toughest sport to do that.
Yeah, God, can you imagine?
What a bad idea. What a bad fucking idea. No.
Yeah. Whiskey and cowboys.
After you've done working 18 hours a day, some we're going to throw you onto a bull.
Yeah, sitting around, herding cattle. We got to drink whiskey straight because we've got no ice. And we've got no entertainment. So we're out in the middle of freaking nowhere. So let's put Jimmy on that on that bull. and just to make the bull pissed off, we're going to tie the rope to his you-know-whats.
Right.
Every time he pulls. Yeah,
Who balls, came up Rusty, with that? His balls. We're going to cinch the rope right around his balls.
Yeah. Who came up with that? Here, have a shot of whiskey, kid. Yeah, get on there.
Be fine. Walk it off. Matt Hugestall wants to know, and then we get out of here. Do you ever lace them up, Rusty? Are you playing in a beer league or anything?
I haven't since I haven't been on the ice. Oh, I have. I've been on the ice maybe once in the last 5 years.
You drink a lot of it, but...
Ice.
5 years ago? Last time?
Yeah, once in the last 5 years, played in a autism tournament in Vancouver, for a charity event. But I used to skate, do about 4 events a year, and then I started working for Discovery and selling real estate. And so it just, I haven't really done
it. You told me this week you're not coming to an event that I'm going to. Said no.
I'm really good at these Zoom fundraisers.
Yeah. they're the best.
I did one with Wendell Clark and Gary Lehman the other, a few weeks ago. It was great.
When do we get Wendell on?
Yeah, I should ask him.
We'd love to hear from him. Okay, Rusty, another show in the books. A little light on the fun, but pretty good answers, Rusty. I got to admit, you know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about. And thanks a lot to everyone for your questions. And we want to get your emails, okay? TheSuspendables@yahoo.com. And check out the suspendables.com, our website, where everything's on there, all the shows too. And show 99 is coming up in about a month.
Hey, and for all the real estate agents that are listening in Edmonton, you can blame Jimmy for the working men and women that are out in front of your for sale sign.
Yes.
When you're about to show the house and they want a 50 spot to move. And make sure there's no cops around.
It's a new realtor charity. Help a hooker today.
Can you?
Let's get out of here, Rusty. Okay. You've been listening to me, Jungle Jim, and of course the superstar.
Oh God, superstar.
Retired NHLer Russ Curtin will be back again next week with another episode of The Suspendables. Take it easy, Rusty.
You too, my friend.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.